And good evening and welcome to Bird Calls from Red River Radio. This program is made possible by the Noel Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and is also brought to you in part by the Piney Woods Audubon Society in Nacogdoches-Lufkin, educating people and protecting birds for over four decades. The Piney Woods Audubon Society is seeking new members and meets the first Thursday of each month, September through May. Information is available on Facebook at East Texas Piney Woods Audubon. We invite you to call in with your questions tonight about our feathered friends and the avian world at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Cliff Shackelford is our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and he is ready to answer your questions about birds tonight. Cliff is currently the statewide non-game ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department, a position he has held since 1997, and he has been an avid bird watcher for more than 30 years. He's also the first author of the book Hummingbirds of Texas, published in 2005 by Texas A&M Press, and he has authored more than 80 publications on birds and birding. And Cliff, thank you so much for joining us again tonight.
Hey, Bill, I'm always happy to be here. Can you hear me?
Yep, I can hear you.
Okay.
By the way, Cliff and his wife and their two children currently live in East Texas. Once again, if you have questions tonight about our birding world, give us a call at 800-552-8502. Again, that's 800-552-8502. If you'd like to support during this show, we encourage you to go online right now at redriverradio.org. That's the easiest way to keep it from getting confused. And Cliff, at the end of last month's program, you gave us a conservation tip, and we always like to refresh that. What did you have for us last month?
We talked about spreading the love of the outdoors, and for people to take someone out in the great outdoors, especially a kid. Kids are just different today. It's not bad different, not good different, just different. You know, when you and I were growing up, Bill, we didn't have video games and computers and cell phones and subscription TV with over 100 channels. And so most parents just said, get out and just make sure you don't hurt yourself and get back for dinner. And that was the best thing you could ever do, is send your kids outside. So I hardly see kids riding their bikes anymore. It's really a rarity. People are locked up inside. And so this conservation tip is not a daily expectation. Come on. You're not expected to take someone outside every day. But think about doing maybe quarterly or three times a year at most, or at least. And so get kids outside, because indoor kids, it's led to dramatic rises in obesity, attention difficulty, depression. You can get really lifted, your spirits lifted, by being in the outdoors. And that's not just birding. There's hiking, fishing, hunting, camping, canoeing. There's all kinds of things you can do to get a kid hooked on the outdoors and to keep you hooked on the outdoors. And most importantly, we humans don't protect what we don't cherish. And so we need that next generation to appreciate the outdoors, to save that great outdoors for future generations.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. We already have some calls online, but we've got to get to our profile species first. So what do you have for us this time around?
Yeah, this month's profiled species is the red-eyed vireo, one of my favorite colloquial names or old-timer names for any bird is the one for the red-eyed vireo, and it's called the preacher bird, because they're rarely quiet. During our warmer months, listen for the song of the red-eyed vireo as heard here.
I'm pretty sure I have one of those over at my place. I thought he was preaching to me.
Yeah. And maybe you'll hear this bird's call notes as heard here. We call that the shrad. The vireos, when they scold, it's kind of a shrad. But to help memorize the song of this vireo in spring and summer, listen for clear, hurried whistles and short phrases separated by brief pauses, as in this popular mnemonic. Hey, you, over here. Look up high. See me? Where are you? These whistled phrases are repeated over and over, often from dawn to dusk throughout spring and summer. Vireos look a bit like a warbler, but they have a stouter bill and are often slower and more sluggish than a flitty, active warbler. This vireo, the red-eyed vireo, is a long-distance migrant that winters in the tropics of Latin America. They return to the Red River Radio listening area starting in late March, but their arrival really peaks between mid-April and the end of May. Many of those individuals that are passing through are headed to more northerly breeding grounds, but many of them do stick around and breed here locally. This species has a large continental breeding range across a lot of the U.S. and Canada. In fall, these vireos head back south in August and September, with a few stragglers leaving shortly before Halloween. Once you master their song, they're quite easy to locate, but very difficult to observe since they're usually way up high in the forest canopy. Overall, they're fairly drab in earth tone colors that include olive green above and dingy white below. The sexes are alike. Singing males sit motionless but look just like the underside of a leaf, making them blend into their environment. Vireos are insectivorous and typically glean insects from the surface of leaves. By doing so, they're helping keep numbers in check of, for instance, hungry moth larvae so the tree's leaves don't all get gobbled up. To see a great photo of a red-eyed vireo that includes seeing the bird's red eye, which often appears black in many photos, be sure to go to the Bird Calls page at redriverradio.org to see an image snapped by James Childress of Lufkin.
And it is a very attractive bird. I got to see that photo up close and personal. And nice-looking bird. I think I've got one in our apartment complex.
Oh, cool.
You're listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. Give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we do have calls online, and we have lines open right now, by the way, folks. Leon from Bossier, you're up first. What's on your mind tonight? You're on with Cliff. Hello, Leon? Okay, well, don't hear anybody there. Leon, can you hear me? All right, we're going to go next to Bert, is it? Is it Bert from Shreveport?
Bruce from
Bruce.
Shreveport.
Okay, thank you. What's on your mind tonight, Bruce?
Well, I grew up, I'm an old man now, but I grew up with my father reading to me from Lowry's book, Birds of Louisiana, which was the bird Bible at that time in our house. And I know there's been so much research since then. Is that still considered viable and accurate for even though it's dated?
Well, it's still the only Bible for the state of Louisiana for all year round. And it's still a good book. And I love those old books like Lowry's book, and the one before that's by Oberholzer, who also wrote the original Birds of Texas. And to me, those old books are very relevant today because they kind of paint a picture of what things used to be like and gives great perspective. So if you look in Lowry's book, he talks about the ivory builds that were in northeast Louisiana near Tallulah on the Tensar River. So, a lot of new books might not include that. So, but that's still a great book.
Yeah, that particular story is marvelous to know about. Okay, thank you very much for your answer.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have four lines open, and we got Leon back. Leon, you're on with Cliff. What's going on, Leon?
What's birding me?
Yeah, there you go. What's birding you? What's bugging you is next week.
Last night, about 2 o'clock in the morning, I awoke and heard in the backyard a bird in the middle of the night that I hadn't normally heard before. And then when I got up about 6 this morning, he had moved to the tree in the front yard.
Okay.
And it was kind of a caw, 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 sort of a sound. And I wonder what kind of night birds that we have.
Don't know what that could be. I'm trying to rack my brain here, Leon, and I don't know. That's a pretty good imitation you did. Definitely eliminates owls. Eliminates any nightjars. Eliminates any frogs that are bird-like. The only thing that really kind of sounds like, and they do vocalize at night, is the yellow-billed cuckoo. And they kind of make a call like that. But I've never heard one in October. I think most of them are gone by now. So I don't know the answer, Leon. There's nothing coming to mind definitively with that. So, yeah, I don't know what to tell you, Leon, other than possibly a yellow-billed cuckoo. There's a team of researchers in my building that put out frog loggers at night, and they get yellow-billed cuckoo and yellow-breasted chat on their recordings in the middle of the night. I'm talking midnight, 2 a.m., and all, of course, Chuck Wills widows and great horned owls and expected nocturnal birds, but you don't expect a yellow-billed cuckoo or yellow-breasted chat calling at night. So that's just my guess, is that it could be a yellow-billed cuckoo, but that seems kind of late for them to be coming through. I've not heard them vocalize. So I don't know. Leon, that's a good one, and I don't know the full answer. I don't have a definitive answer for you.
It was a four or five call.
Well,
part of the thing, and I'd not heard it before, so I thought they might just be moving through the area.
Yeah, it could be a migrant. And so if you hear it again, record it. And what we tell people to do is use your cell phone. If you have a smartphone, you have a video function, and just use that because that'll turn on the microphone. You don't need to worry about the image that it's capturing, just that the microphone is absorbing that sound for us. But I think that's maybe the best thing to do if you can record it, and maybe we can hear it. Because there's also night herons. I'm thinking about the night herons that make calls, but they don't do it that repeatedly that I can think of that you're mentioning. But it could be a night heron, and that would be more likely. But yeah, I bet it's a migrant that's passing through and vocalizing, and now I'm very curious. So,
yeah.
So Leon, do us a favor and record it. That would be really cool.
I'll give it a try.
Okay.
Thank you for your help.
Yep,
a wonderful show.
Oh, great. Thank you, sir.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We don't have a name yet, but we're going to go to our next caller online. And you're on with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Is this me?
Yep, you're on. Can you give us your name and where you're from?
Well, my name is Piero Fenchi.
All right.
I am from Nacogdoches, Texas.
All right.
And I have been a dear friend of Cliff Shackelford for many years and his beautiful family. And Cliff, I'm a bird watcher, and of course Cliff is a guru, and he taught me how to reiterate the call of a barred owl.
Are you going to do that for us on the air, Piero?
Well, you know, I really am not very good at it.
Huh.
So I thought that maybe Cliff should do that.
So,
is that you, Cliff?
Yeah, that's me. So,
oh, Cliff!
So
I thought you were the. No, Cliff.
Yeah,
I have pledged. You know, the every money I've ever, every dollar I've ever made to you. If indeed you can properly show to the listeners of this beautiful radio program, the call of the barred owl.
Well, I'm happy to do it, Piero. And you mentioned that I taught it to you before. Why don't we look at this as a refresher? And when I get done hooting, I want to hear, and we all want to hear you do it. How about that?
Oh, God, I hate not being good at something.
Well, the good thing is no one's looking. You know, that's the beauty of radio.
I'll give it.
There's no mugshot with this.
I'll try.
Okay, I'll go first. And to remind listeners that are familiar with the barred owl, it's the one with deep hoots that sounds like it's saying, "Who cooks for you? Who cooks for you all?" And here it is. And that's the barred owl. And Pierre, let's hear yours.
Oh, I can't.
Oh.
I hate being lousy at something.
Okay.
Ooh, okay, you ready?
We're ready. Hey. All right. That sounds good. I don't know if you're going to attract many females with that call, Piero.
No, I know. That's the story of my life.
Yeah, there you go.
Cliff, let me grab a second because I know, I guess I'm on the radio.
Yes.
But, you know, NPR, when I moved to Nacogdoches in 1975, there was no National Public Radio. And I put up a huge antenna on my property next to my kitchen door, and I would, and so I could get the Dallas NPR station.
Cool.
Because they had it in Dallas. And so then at night, you know, we could barely pick it up in Nacogdoches, and I would turn it with my hand, the aerial, because I could reach it out the door until the angle was right, and I could pull in the signal at night.
Oh, that's
and
cool.
Get NPR. Well, and then they did this in Shreveport. I mean, it has just changed my life.
And you don't have to get on the roof anymore and turn that antenna.
Yeah, but that's so fun.
look at birds during the migration. But anyway, I just wanted I made this call on the donation night because I'm so proud of you, all of what you've done for this part of the world regards to. To the birds and to the world, and then to NPR because you guys have been so huge in my life.
Thank you.
Great.
So I'm just so proud of you, Cliffy.
Great. Thank you, Piero.
You did a good job. I know I did a better job than you did. I'll see you all later.
Okay. Thanks, Piero.
Thank you, Piero. And you can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502 for bird calls. Cliff Shackelford is with us. We're going to go ahead and give him a real bard owl
And we did not script that. He did not tell me he was calling. So, okay, you're going to play the real bard owl. Go ahead, Bill.
We got another one in there,
yeah,
don't
there's
we?
coming up. Yeah.
And there's your bard owl. Now that'll get the girls in there.
There you go.
800-552-8502 to call in for bird calls right now. That's 800-552-8502. And we had Joey online, but we lost him. So we're going to go to a question that I have for you. Joey, if you're listening, please call back. 800-552-8502. We seem to have lost you. We have a show coming up in November. And we're going to be featuring a couple of game wardens. This is about, it's not about all the other game that you can be hunting out there. You're specifically focusing on game birds, are you not, for this
Any
show?
Birds. It's okay. The point is that the game wardens, they have to deal with all taxa, mammals, fish, birds. But this is a bird show, so we're going to have them just talk about birds, and we're going to ask callers that want to ask questions of our on-air guests to keep the questions specific to birds. And we're real excited to have a game warden from Texas Parks and Wildlife come on air, as well as a game warden from Louisiana Department of Wildlife and Fisheries. So we're going to have, respectively, Scott Robertson and Troy Parker coming on the show next week, November 13th at 6 o'clock. We're pretty excited about these guys that will sit in the studio for an hour and talk to us about what it's like to be a game warden. We're going to hear about some of the interesting calls that they've gotten over their years of service and what it means to be a game warden. What are the oddities of their job? How dangerous is it? And then we'll open up the phone lines that people can ask questions like a normal bird calls of me, of bird questions, or of the game wardens regarding being a game warden. So tune in next month. It will be a hit.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call right now at 800-552-8502. We have two calls online right now. Alan, please stay on the line because Leah is up before you. Leah from Natchitoches, you're online with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Hi, Cliff. I am a writer. I live in northern Louisiana, Natchitoches. And I'm doing research for a book.
Okay.
And I was just wondering if there was any bird that is specifically native to Louisiana or comes here, you know, that like the Holy Grail that bird watchers would go to find, come here to find.
Okay. And then they can't find it anywhere else?
Yeah. Yeah. Something like that. Just something that is really special for Louisiana.
Yeah. And there's nothing that's coming to mind that's unique to Louisiana. We have examples in Texas of that. But Louisiana is a little tougher. You know, if people want to see reintroduced whooping cranes, there's not a lot of those you can see in the country. There have been other attempts, even failed attempts at reintroducing whooping cranes. So the White Lake area, not far from Lafayette, they've introduced some whooping cranes. Those are kind of interesting. People come here to see red-cockaded woodpeckers, but you can see those in 15 or 18 other states. So the coast, I mean, the big thing for Louisiana is Cameron Parish and migration, both spring and fall migration. That's really what a lot of the Louisiana birders do. And that's kind of the Holy Grail. So it's not a species that they're after. It's what could be next seen there, because a lot of the state's rarities have been found in Cameron Parish, Louisiana. And that's the parish in the very southwestern corner of the state. So I guess I'm answering your question a little differently. And it's not a particular bird, but it's a hot spot where there have been really neat records of birds. Unusual things have shown up.
Oh, very cool. That helps a lot.
Yeah. So tell me about this book you're working on. Does it have to do with wildlife or ecology or what?
Well, I write for young adults.
Oh.
So, and I was listening and you were talking about getting kids outside and experiencing nature, and I thought, well, wouldn't that be a great idea to write a book that has a lot to do with birds and getting involved with that?
Yeah. Well, I would encourage you to join the Louisiana Ornithological Society and meet people that way through that organization, and go to one of their meetings when they have it in Cameron Parish, and go down there and see for yourself, see the dozens and dozens of bird watchers and how focused they are and committed and get a taste of what they're doing.
That sounds like so much fun.
It would be. I think you'll get hooked. I think anybody that goes and does that will get really hooked on birds. So that's what I'd recommend, and I hope that works out for you, Leah, and good luck with your book project.
Well, thank you very much.
Uh-huh.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and we have callers online and lines open right now. John from Fishville, please stay on the line. We've got Alan just ahead of you. Alan, you're on with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Thanks, Bill. Thanks, Cliff.
You bet.
My question is, I have learned, or just recently, within the last couple of days, noticed a nest in a tall pine tree near my house. And it seems like a red hawk is, or a very large red hawkish bird is flying around it and standing on the nest. And I was curious as to, is this the time of year that kind of a bird would be nesting, or
yeah,
is it toward the end of their season? Or
it's definitely
a little bit about that.
Yeah, that's a good question. And so those stick platform nests can, you know, stick around for a while. They can get reused by other birds. You'll see red-tailed hawks build a stick nest, and then months and months later, a great horned owl will use it. They use abandoned platform nests like that. But no, I don't think that anybody's nesting on it. I think it's just coincidence. I think it's just, it could be the young bird that was grown, raised out of that nest several months ago. Maybe he's got detachment issues. You know,
he's certainly dive bombing the neighborhood. It seems like a youthful bird.
So no, I don't think I don't think there's any active nesting right now. You know, I have seen stranger things, and with some things like barn owls in grassland and prairie settings, they can nest four or five times a year. And really in any month of the year, it's usually prey dependency. But I don't know of any of the hawks that are doing that. So I would think that maybe some more careful observation would yield an answer that you're looking for. So your homework, Alan, is to watch that nest and see what happens. See if there is a late nesting or some anomaly. But I suspect there's not.
Sounds great. Thank
you. Okay, thank you.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. You can give us a call now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we do have lines open right now. Again, the number is 800-552-8502. John from Fishville, you are on with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Cliff.
Oh, turn down that radio in the background because it'll echo all over the place.
Well, I think I got mine turned off.
Oh, okay. Well, that's coming back through your phone then.
Yeah. Oh, I got the speaker on.
Ah, there you go.
That's it.
All right.
Hey, John, how's it going?
Doing good. Hey, I've got really wild one for you.
Okay.
I was up in Illinois a couple of weeks ago, and I was out on a farm, and I had my little shiny trailer out on the barnyard, not actually in the barnyard, but out on the pasture.
Mm-hmm.
And a few hours later, came out, and there was something had crashed onto that shiny trailer from above, and it dissolved the paint. Now, I called my insurance company, and the lady said, well, you know, an egg... maybe a bird flew by and laid an egg and it crashed down onto your trailer, and that will dissolve paint. I don't think so.
No. And birds aren't carrying eggs right now, and they typically aren't going to be dropping them randomly like that.
Yeah.
No.
Well, there were some Canadian geese flights going over at that time.
Yeah.
But I didn't think it was possible for a goose to drop an egg out of the sky.
No, I doubt it. And so what happened? Did it dent the trailer?
No, but it dissolved the paint.
Dissolved the paint.
Yeah, and I have asked everybody that I can think of, what in the world could that have been?
Yeah.
Out there, it was not a vandalism thing. It was out there in the countryside. It was just a mystery. I did save a little scrap of that red, I thought it was a red something that had and dropped on it.
Yeah.
But that was actually the paint that I got a little piece of.
Yeah.
And I saved that, and I'm going to try to find a chemist somewhere that will give me an idea of what the chemical is in that thing.
Yeah, maybe it was a little piece of meteorite that hit it. I don't know. It doesn't sound like a bird. I don't think I'd point finger at birds.
Well, there was no dent, so it was just strange.
Yeah, that is strange. Well, at least it's not your Maserati that got dissolved paint.
Well, it actually is worth as much as Maserati. It's a little a trailer that comes behind my little three-wheel motorcycle.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for the call, John.
All right, Cliff, really enjoy your show, man.
Great. Thank you.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and we have lines open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502, and we hope you'll call in right now. I have a quick question. I know hummingbird migration is roughly past right now. How exactly was the I mean, did we see a lot of hummingbirds come through the area, and did the cold front affect them at all?
Yeah, so we just finished pushing this cold front pushed a lot of the ruby-throated hummingbirds out of here, and that's the trigger is weather and lack of food. And keep your feeders up. We recommend keeping feeders up in the winter, and that's when there could be an overwintering species like a rufous hummingbird. So don't take your hummingbird feeder down. That's an old wives' tale that said, if you don't take them down, they won't migrate. That's baloney. They're hardwired to migrate. When they're ready to do it, they'll do so. But we did have a humdinger of a hummingbird season in my yard in over a decade. We've never had the numbers that we've had. Starting around September 12th and extending up to about a few days ago, it was about a four-week window of just constant hummingbirds, and it was really fantastic. So we had a really good time. We had to really be vigilant about brewing up nectar to replace the feeder and make sure that, you know, when we left in the morning, it wasn't just barely hanging on, because it had to be full or it would have drained. So, and that's typical in a lot of areas in fall migration, but it in our yard in particular, we had a really good fall migration. I heard about from a lot of friends in the listening area that had a lot of ruby throats. So maybe it was a bumper crop this year. I don't know. But it was a good year for ruby throats.
All right. And at this point, since that part is on, what can we expect as far as migration through the area for the remainder of October and in November?
Yeah, finally some cold weather has hit us. It's a continental-wide cold front. If you look at what it's done to our north in the Great Plains, it's left snow behind. So that's a big trigger to move birds south. So the beauty is we can finally see some of our winter birds arriving soon. I think that people will start getting goldfinches and pine siskins at their feeders. White-throated sparrows will be coming soon, and you'll get those on your feeder. Or sometimes they're a little skittish. They're under the feeder. But that this front's the kind of thing that pushes a lot of the northern flickers and brown thrashers and ruby crown kinglets and yellow-bellied sapsuckers and things like that down our way. So there's a lot of things coming, and to me it's exciting because we haven't seen a lot of those birds since March, April, and it's good to have them come back.
So one of the sounds we should be listening for is this one?
Yeah. So let's listen a second to this one. And the handle for that one is, oh, sweet Canada, 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 if you're Canadian. And right. If you're not Canadian, you say, oh, Sam Peabody, Peabody, Peabody. So that's the white-throated sparrow. And we get a lot of calls on that one, people asking, what's that bird in the winter that's singing the really sweet whistle? I used to think it was my neighbor, and I realize it's a little bird. And again, it's the white-throated sparrow. They're only here in the winter months, and they should be arriving any day now.
All right. We'll look forward to those. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and we have lines open right now. Go ahead and give us a call, 800-552-8502. Clyde from Nacogdoches, you're on with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Trying to identify a small bird that tragically apparently crashed into a sign and fell dead. But he was about, I don't know, the size of an indigo bunting or goldfinch or a little smaller, and was kind of a yellowish or grayish color underneath and a real pretty sort of what I would call rifle green on the on his back.
Mm-hmm.
Any idea?
Yeah, it sounds like it could be one of the vireos or maybe even a warbler. If did you take a picture of it since you found it dead?
Didn't have a camera or a cell phone.
Okay, that's too bad, because that's the greatest thing you can do is take a picture and then send it to us, and then that makes it real easy, because, boy, a picture really is worth 1,000 words.
Yes.
Yes, so.
If I could find my bird book, I could probably find the silly
thing.
But it's going into hiding right now.
Yeah, the bird you described, it could fit a number of species, and I'm never going to be able to tell from that description.
Okay, well, I say it was a solid, the back was a solid, sort of an olive green.
Right.
Or I would call it, what I think of is rifle green.
Right. No, I think it was a warbler or a vireo, and that's the best we can
do. Okay, well,
yeah.
The beak would fit those.
Yeah.
I mean, the beak shape and whatever.
Okay.
It was not as heavy a beak as I usually think of finches having.
Right, right.
It was a sharper, smaller beak.
Right.
And Clyde, we do have a picture of the vireo up on our website, so you can always look at that for the Cliff Shackelford post for today,
right,
for the bird calls, and see if that is close to it.
Okay, I can do that.
Okay.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Clyde.
Right. You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and we are going to go next to Michael from Shreveport. Michael, you're on with Cliff Shackelford. What's your question tonight?
Hi, thank you very much. Mr. Shackle, tell me what I'm doing wrong. I've been trying for years to attract purple martins to my boxes. I've got them in open fields. I've made sure they're cleaned out. They are commercials, you know, store-bought sheet metal birdhouses.
Right.
I put decoys. I've left them out. I've put them in different directions. I don't know why the birds aren't coming.
Have you tried the tape, the endless loop tape that some people try?
I don't know about that. Is that an audio thing?
Yeah. So you've got the decoy, and you can have an audio that has their chirps that will maybe grab their attention. And it's not for everybody. You know, there's not enough purple martins to go around for every backyard. So it could be that in your neighborhood, somebody else has the colony, and you just have to be satisfied with that. And then
there are colonies, you know, within a quarter mile, half mile. So maybe there's a lot of competition for nesting.
Yeah, there's a lot of competition, and they travel a long way to feed. So a quarter mile, half mile is nothing for them to feed. So you're probably sharing birds with an existing colony, and there's just not enough to go around.
Thank you. Well, that's good to know. I'll try the auditory signal.
Yeah.
See what happens. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Michael.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. All lines are open right now, and you can give us a call at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And we wanted to refresh our listeners about some commonly heard bird-like sounds in our area. Do you want to talk about these and then we'll play them and let us know what we're about to hear?
Yeah, it's a super common call that we get saying, what's this bird calling at night? I hear it right next to the bedroom window, or I go out to take out the trash. It's chirping right there by the trash can, and I get the flashlight out and it stops singing and I never see it fly away. And let's listen to it and I'll tell you what it is.
Now I have that one literally outside my apartment.
Right. And it's a chirp, 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 very bird-like. But guess what? It is not a bird. It's a frog. It's called the Rio Grande chirping frog. And they have moved into our listening area over the last decade or two by means of shipping industry. They get into potted plants down in South Texas, and then those potted plants get shipped all over the place to a big box store near you, and it's an easy way for frogs and geckos and anoles and other things to hitch a ride, like the good old days, thumbing a ride. So that's the Rio Grande chirping frog. So when you hear that little chirp, 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 it's not a bird. It's a frog, the Rio Grande chirping frog. They're out at night. You can hear them in the day as well. And they're tiny. If you look for them, they're smaller than a man's thumbnail. So on a normal man-sized hand, they'd be probably about the size of your pinky nail. They're that little. They're usually sitting low in the vegetation. They don't need a pond. They don't need water. They can use just little rain droplets to survive. So they're in our neighborhoods. They are calling around offices and homes, and hopefully next time you hear it, you'll say, that's a Rio Grande chirping frog.
There you go.
It's not
impress
a bird.
Your neighbors.
Yeah, there you go.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist. All lines are open right now, so you can get right in. 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And there's another frog that kind of comes to our area as well. Let's give a listen to this one.
It's another bird alike and a sound alike to birds. And so people hear these are the gray tree frogs calling, and they're up in trees, and they can call in the day or night, and you'll just look and look for that bird, and there's no bird there. It's a little bitty frog. If you see them, sometimes they'll be stuck to your window. They're very gray, and if you can grab one, they usually have some yellow in their armpits. Is a good definitive marker on them. But when they're calling, boy, they sure do sound like birds. So that's the gray tree frog.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist. All lines are open right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. And here's a sound that you might hear and not exactly know what it is. Now, if you hear that at night,
pack up and leave.
Yeah, that is the vampire call. No, just kidding.
Yep. So this is one we've played before, and it was brought to our attention on the show. And this is the red fox, and it's the bark of the red fox. And you'll hear that at night, especially in the breeding season. Or there's some similar calls that the young will do when they're begging for food. But people will wonder, is that Bigfoot? Or is that an owl? Or what is it? But it's a mammal. It's the red fox. And they're common in our area. And people that put up game cameras, and I've done this in my own backyard. I live right in the middle of the city. And the game camera tripped with a red fox. I even could see the red boots and the white tip on his tail. And he ran past my camera, and I got a picture in the city at 1 a.m. Mm-hmm. You know, when I'm not looking outside, and I wouldn't have seen it anyway in the pitch dark of night. So red foxes are out there, and if you hear that weird sound at night, that's what is causing it.
All right.
Yeah.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist. You can get in right now on the phones at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. We have lines open right now and hope you'll call in. In the meantime, you know, the migratory season has started, but we have been experiencing a cold front here recently. Has that been enough to affect any of the migration or disturb any of the populations locally that might be wintering over?
It certainly was going to push out any summer tanager that was lingering. Like I mentioned earlier, our ruby-throated hummingbirds, any of the birds that are supposed to leave in the fall. That was a really good trigger to do so. It doesn't mean it's going to get all of them, but the smart ones are going to get the hint and head south. And to our north, when that storm hits way up to the north, it's a trigger to push a lot of birds. And there's, you know, we talked about hummingbird migration, but I didn't mention budios. Those are hawks. And that cold front was a big one to push out our continent's broad-winged hawks. And farther to our west of our listening area in central Texas and south Texas, Swainson's hawks. Both of those species migrate in big flocks of hundreds and hundreds of individuals. It might be 20, but, you know, red-tailed hawks, they don't get in big flocks. Red-shouldered hawks don't. And most of those typically don't migrate. But if you see a big flock of raptors and they're broad, heavy-winged birds in this listening area, they're probably broad wings. And that, again, that cold front would have pushed those out. And those guys are headed way south. And the Swainson's hawks even farther south to Argentina and to the grasslands, the pampas. And they're headed a long way. So, yeah, the cold snaps are... You know, they're a given. They're going to happen, and it shouldn't be any question when we see birds appear, because it brings them down or it makes birds disappear that aren't supposed to be here in the colder months. So it's the trigger that gets things moving, and this was a good one. Because, I mean, think about it, 24 hours before or even 12 hours before, everybody's running their AC. It was hot, and then all of a sudden it got cold. I talked to a friend of mine and South Texas in LaSalle County, and he had it was 94 degrees, and the next day it was 54. So he had a huge drop in temperature with his front. So ours wasn't that dramatic, but it was pretty darn dramatic. And my AC is off now, and the windows are open, and boy, I'm loving it.
My heat is on.
Yeah.
It's almost as if a state trooper came up behind the weather, and it just slowed down real quick from 95 to 55.
Right.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford, and we could love to hear from you right now at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. 8502. So now, growing up north, I know robins and cardinals and birds like that leave during the wintertime. Is this a prominent migration area or overwintering area for robins and cardinals?
It is. Yeah, for not so much cardinals. I mean, cardinals don't do a lot of movement. They might be a short-range migrant, but not like a robin or red-winged blackbird. Common grackles. There are a lot of songbirds that will come down here to the south in the Gulf Coast states and overwinter with us. So, yeah, we'll have huge numbers of robins in the winter, of red-winged blackbirds, brown-headed cowbirds will be coming through, lots of things. And then waterfowl. Think about all the waterfowl that pour through here. That this cold front, when water starts to freeze, that's a big trigger for waterfowl to come down. There's going to be a lot of movement of birds with this cold front.
You are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, and we have lines open right now, all lines, as a matter of fact, at 800-552-8502. That's 800-552-8502. Any question regarding birds in our birding world and the avian world are welcome. We hope you'll call in right now. You know, with the what migratory birds were triggered to push south with this recent cold front out of our area and decide to, you know, maybe South America looks a little better?
Yeah, I think the big winner would have been the ruby-throated hummingbird that was still here in fairly good numbers. They really peaked third and fourth week of September. Numbers started dropping in October, but didn't go to zero. But there were still a lot of lingerers, and this front would have done it and pushed a lot of those ruby throats out. And like I said, a lot of broad-winged hawks would have flown over. People see these big flights of birds. They're hard to see. Sometimes if you're looking up, you just see these pepper flecks up in the air, and you don't know what they are, and you start counting in tens and twenties. And if they're raptors, they're probably broad-winged hawks that were flying over. And it's really a neat sight to see. And these are birds that bred to our north. They could have been pushed out of southern Canada and the Great Lakes states. And they're coming through our listening area, and they're headed south. A lot of them are going to skirt the Gulf. The raptors, for example, don't like to cross open water, so they're going to be what we call circum-Gulf migrants. So once they hit the Gulf Coast, they have to decide whether to go east or west around the Gulf and to skirt it. And most of them, not all of them, probably head west to go over the overland route. It's a guaranteed overland route to go the Mexico way versus island hopping the Caribbean way.
And just out of curiosity, I've seen lots of videos of starlings, which are just absolutely beautiful in flight. Where would be the best area within maybe a day drive from here to go and visualize that out in the country?
Urban settings or ag land that have cattle feedlots. If you've got some other ag kind of land, you'll see these big flocks of starlings. I think we've talked about this on the show before, where they get in these flocks. It might have been last episode that someone talked about that, where they get in these flocks. They don't look like they're hitting each other, but it swirls and changes shapes. I saw that, and I think I even mentioned it. Of all places, I was driving on the loop in Crockett, Texas, and just happened upon it. So it's just going to be one of those things. You're going to have to be lucky to stumble upon it. But if you're in an urban setting or ag property or near a feedlot where there's a lot of cows, those are where starlings are hanging out. Mm-hmm. Grain silos, that kind of thing. They're not in the big, deep woods. So if you're in the bottomland hardwood forest, that's not where the starlings are.
All right. You are listening to Bird Calls, and we do have calls online. So Pat and Jordan, please hang on the line. We've got to go to John from Fishville next. John, you're on with Cliff. What's your question?
Cliff, a while ago someone called about the purple martin and sharing the purple martins with the neighbors.
Yep.
And you mentioned an audio tape.
Yep.
All right. Tell me again how we get that.
Well, I don't know if Purple Martin Conservation Association still has those available, but in this era of MP3 digital files, you can go on the internet and find all you want. on purple martin vocalizations. The key is going to be, do you have a recording, a recorder to play it back, a speaker to play it out of. So if the Purple Martin Conservation Association still has a website, they were based out of Edinburgh, Pennsylvania, and I haven't visited their website in a while, but they used to sell that kind of stuff, and I don't know if they still do, but really just go online and try to find the dawn call of the purple martin, and that's when you're supposed to do it.
And that's the key word, the dawn call.
Yeah, the morning call. So D-A-W-N, and blast that for, you know, 30 minutes every morning.
All right, you are listening to Bird Calls with our resident ornithologist, Cliff Shackelford. We've got Pat up next, and Jordan, please stay online. Pat, you're on with Cliff. What's your question?
Okay. Hey, it's kind of a crazy question. Y'all might kind of laugh at this, but I've been wanting to get into hummingbird feeders, and you know, I know you're supposed to put like sugar water in those fake flower-looking things. And this is kind of dumb, but you know, they keep talking about sugar is kind of bad for humans, and that, you know, I know that nectar is probably more of a fructose kind of thing. So are we really doing the hummingbirds any favors?
Well,
by giving them sugar water instead of fructose?
Yeah, and sugar, like anything, is fine in humans in moderation. So it's not killing us. Otherwise, we'd have billions of dead people. We have, you know, of course, we're carrying a lot of weight with us because we have trouble with eating too much sugar. But I wouldn't start worrying about that. But table sugar is the closest sweetener that we have that mimics the glucose of the carbohydrate-rich nectar that they find in the wild. So that's why I remind people, don't use any other sweetener. Don't say, oh, I want them to be on a diet, and I'm going to use the pink stuff. If you've ever seen a hummingbird and how fast they fly and how hard their heart is beating, they don't need to go on a diet. They are going to burn that stuff up because they are a Formula One race car in every respect. So that bird has the highest oxygen requirement of any bird on the planet. And if you know engines, you know that you need to have a lot of air to keep that engine going. So don't worry about the sweetener. Use the table sugar, 4 parts water, 1 part table sugar, and no red dye. Okay, Pat?
Okay, yeah, thank you.
Great.
For the call.
Thank you.
All right, and we're going to go next to Jordan on Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford. Jordan, you're up with Cliff. What's your question tonight?
Hey, Cliff, in the past few months, I have seen 3 different bald eagles on 3 different occasions, and for the first 30 years of my life, I had never seen them, and
yep.
I was wondering if there's a population boom, if there's more of them moving into our area. I saw 2 in Shreveport and 1 down in the Nacogdoches area where
yep.
I live.
Yep, they are on the increase. They have been for the last few decades. In Texas, they were in such low numbers in the 70s because of DDT that you could hardly see one. There were very few known nests, 7 known nests in the 70s. Now we have probably 300-plus breeding pairs in Texas and many, many more that are from the north that come in winter with us, and same with Louisiana. So that is definitely something you and I would recognize if we've been looking in the outdoors for the last 30 years. You're going to notice the increase in bald eagles, and you just did, Jordan, and that's pretty cool.
Is that due to environmental regulation?
It is.
More of them now?
Yeah, you bet. Anyone that doesn't believe in DDT, look at the decline. Look at how it was affecting birds. It didn't kill birds. It made their eggshells very thin, so thin that when they went to lay, sit on and brood those eggs, they cracked and broke, so birds weren't capable of breeding and replacing themselves. So it didn't kill a bird, it just didn't let you have young. And so with the removal of DDT, eggshells have gone back to being thick, and it's taken a while. It's not something that's like a light switch that happens overnight, but we have seen it over the last few decades.
That's really cool. I'm glad to see them around.
Yep.
Hey, I enjoy your show.
Great. Thank you, Jordan.
And it is time for us to go to our conservation tip. What do you have for us this month, Cliff?
Well, birds and windows just don't mix. That's the title of the conservation tip. So birds and windows simply don't get along, and they haven't gotten along since we started peppering the landscape with buldings and homes. Birds and their pea-sized brains do not know that they don't know that the image they see is actually a reflection from a window, whether it's a reflection of themselves staring back at them or a reflection of the sky, clouds, and trees. To them, it looks perfectly safe to fly through. Boom! Is the sound often heard from the bird who never evolved with such a vertical barrier obstructing their airspace. Many birds that hit the window, even if they just appear to be stunned, may fly off, but will likely die later from severe internal injuries. With an estimated 1 billion birds, yes, that's with a B, billion, dying from flying into windows each year in the U.S., such deaths are one of the top killers of birds. The good news is that you can do something about it at your home or office. If you have a window that's a repeated problem for birds, please do your part to end such senseless injury or death. There are many new and inexpensive and effective products on the market now that can help prevent bird window collisions at your home or office. Go online and do an internet search for the American Bird Conservancy site on this topic, since they list several worthy products that can keep our birds safe. Do it for the birds.
All right, Cliff, I want to thank you again for joining us for another edition of Bird Calls.
Great, it was fun. Thanks, Bill.
You have been listening to Bird Calls with Cliff Shackelford, our resident ornithologist here at Red River Radio, and the state ornithologist for the Texas Parks and Wildlife Department. We'd like to thank everyone at Texas Parks and Wildlife Department for their help with this program. Tonight's program is made possible by the Knoll Foundation and the Community Foundation of North Louisiana, and in part by the Piney Woods Audubon Society of Nacogdoches Lufkin, educating people and protecting birds for over four decades. The Piney Woods Audubon Society is seeking new members and meets the first Thursday of each month, September through May. Information is on Facebook at East Texas Piney Woods Audubon. This has been Bird Calls from Red River Radio. Our producers for this show are Bill Beckett and Cliff Shackelford, with help tonight from Wally Derleth, Susan Fletcher, Tim Schnell, Sheila Lawrence, and Robert Murphy. The sound files used in tonight's profile species were from xenocanto.org and were recorded by Patrick Black and Jonathan Jongsman. This month's bird photo on our bird page was snapped by James Childress. The audio for tonight's program will be up on our website in a few hours. And if you have a photo or sound clip of a bird that you'd like us to identify on Bird Calls, please send it to me, wbeckett@lsus.edu. Be sure to join us next month, November 13th, for the next installment of Bird Calls. And we'll have two guests on air, both state game wardens. And your calls will be taken, and you'll be able to ask our law enforcement agents about birds, birding, and bird hunting. Next week is What's Bugging You here on Red River Radio, and this Thursday at 6 o'clock is another edition of Health Matters. This is Red River Radio, and we are your community-supported public broadcasting service from LSUS. We are KDAQ, Shreveport-Bossier City, KLSA Alexandria Pineville, KBSA El Dorado Magnolia, and KLD and Lufkin Nacogdoches. Stay tuned. Radio Lab is coming up in just a moment.